You know that feeling when you walk into your home, take a deep breath, and feel new? Well, that's what it's like to use Clorox Scentiva. Because Clorox Scentiva smells like coconut, cleans like Clorox, and feels like energy. It'll elevate any cleaning routine to not just clean, but also make every room smell like a tropical coconut getaway. Discover how Clorox Scentiva's powerful clean and refreshing scents can transform your space. Get yours in coconut or other fabulous scents at a nearby retail store.
Coming to you live from the Cross Country Mortgage Campus in Berea, Ohio, this is Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet, now live in Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland. Here are your hosts, Bo Bishop and Nathan Zagura.
All right, let's do it live on a Thursday edition of Cleveland Browns Daily. I am merely Bo. He is the great Gibby. Boy, I'm in a great mood, Gibby. It is sun-kissed in Northeast Ohio. The sun is out. It's a bluebird day. How are things back in Hellscape Indy?
We don't have the ice, I believe. Didn't you have an ice storm this morning?
I don't know. My wife said something woke her up. I don't know. It's fine.
My wife was like 71 is shut down. 90 had some closings.
No. I'm fine on the east side, living my best life.
Any idea what you're doing here? How about this so I can hear myself?
Little Uno.
There we go.
Little Uno. He's out there trying.
Uno, I wrote it down for you. I wrote it down. I scripted it out for you exactly what pot is what. Come on, Smalls.
He's sprinting around making things happen.
I want you to know.
Yeah.
Have you ever heard of the lemon drop shot? You're like, you need a fun little shot. You're like, here's a lemon drop.
It seems like something that I remember lady friends doing when I was in the collegiate times and then maybe right after. I couldn't tell. I feel like vodka's involved, but okay. I only do shots of tequila. That's all I do. Everything else I'm terrified of. I don't like the sweet aspect of it. So give me a lemon drop. What am I looking at here?
I'm not sure other than vodka and there's something else in it.
Oh God. Oh, I'm a Lensic.
But I'm going to tell you this. The lemon drop is a shot.
Yeah.
It is a shot. Okay. Our guy, Uno, we're at high velocity. We're at the JW Sports Bar. It is a who's who.
Yeah.
I look over at the bar and Uno is holding court.
What?
And I mean holding court with members of other teams. He comes back and I think Fila said it best. It's a martini glass that's like – it's like a half a martini glass.
Yeah.
It is a glass, though. It is a large glass.
Okay.
And it is full of a lemon drop.
Okay.
Lemon drop martini. That's a real thing.
So I'm going to stand up –
this guy's sucking down lemon drops. Like, it's a drink.
I'm going to stand up for Uno for just a second in this one aspect of this, and I'm going to admonish him in another aspect.
Perfect.
So there is a lemon drop martini. That is true.
That's what he just said.
It's a sweet and sour. You get a little triple sec in that. There's a fresh lemon juice. There's usually like a sugar that is usually rimming the glass or something like that. That's typically what you see. It is not something, I would say, that is typically ordered and consumed by an Uno. That would not be – if he was going to have something out of a martini glass, a Manhattan or a martini would be the two things that would be more in line. It is typically, though, you see a lemon drop shot. It is rarely that you see a lemon drop cocktail. And so he ordered the cocktail and he was parading around.
Cocktail. Couple cocktails.
Well, God, let him live. Who gets hurt? That's unbelievable.
He was living. He was having a great time. He was having a great time.
What a tremendous order out of him.
It was a tremendous order.
Yeah.
Griff was getting all wild and crazy. He had two Pepsis and three waters.
How many milkshakes did he get on DoorDash?
Did you have a milkshake last night? I could tell you that Uno DoorDashed when we got back, and I believe the remainder of the DoorDash is still in his backpack.
That's correct.
You're hauling it home?
Well, I ordered it last night and then fell asleep before I got a chance to eat it. So didn't want to waste the money bringing it with me today.
So what do I even dare ask what food would that would be fresh last night on a DoorDash that would somehow still be fresh this afternoon?
That it has not been in a fridge or anything else. It
doesn't feel good. I feel like that could lead to food poisoning, Uno. You should probably see a doctor.
He hasn't eaten it yet. It's still in his bag.
I wouldn't. I think you're fine. I think you're – I wouldn't. I'd stay away from it. If it has not been refrigerated, I would stay away from that. So Zakura and I leave, and this is what happens. Uno's running around with lemon drops, ordering DoorDash that he's packing in his backpack.
Yeah.
That's a day.
We got a 4.5-hour drive home. And luckily, I can't smell anything in life, so I'm good there. But
mine was pretty good. I did have the so I supercharged in – I got to Columbus. I supercharged in Columbus, and they had a there was – at the new supercharger out by Polaris is right across the street from a Waffle House. So
did
I
you
had
go to Waffle House?
I have not had Waffle House in 20 years, and it's staring at me just golden yellow. I'm like, God, how can I turn it down? Give me some scattered and smothered and whatever hash browns. Like, that feels like a win. So I sidle right in there.
I
order
would not
my,
have had
just,
that on the bingo card.
Just belly up. I just bellied up right to the bar there at the Waffle House. I thought it was also early enough in the day that there wouldn't be too much tomfoolery going around. And it was, you know, it's 6 o'clock, so it was fine. There were a couple of loud patrons, but that's to be expected. That's in the brochure. I got to tell you, it was delicious. It was absolutely delicious. Yeah. Hash browns, scattered, smothered. I can't remember what it was, but it was cheese, onions, mushrooms, something else. And then I just went Tabasco, salt, and pepper. Heaven. I mean, so good. Just crushed it with the Waffle House. As good as I remember.
Really?
Now, I didn't order. Normally, my order back in the day would have been that with like an egg, and then I would have gotten the waffle, like the pecan waffle. But that just seemed, you know, at my age, that would have taken me 2 weeks to be able to pass through the system, I think. So I sat
we were literally talking about Waffle House this morning, and I'm like, I don't know if I've been to a Waffle House and actually eaten a waffle.
If you the pecan waffle is amazing. Like, if you
okay,
really good. If you
all
do
right.
that, yeah. But no, normally it's not. You eat the other stuff, like the patty melts and the all that stuff.
Yeah, and Uno was talking about, because we were at breakfast at the place where we're staying.
Yeah,
and we were like, what's missing? A waffle maker.
Waffle.
Like
waffle.
One of those, like, you pour it in, you flip the cooker over, and then it dings, and you flip it back. And
that's right.
You take the waffle out. Because I'm not going to lie, the breakfast was outstanding on Monday, and it has been a downward spiral since.
I got nervous. I went down there Tuesday morning.
Yes.
Or was it Wednesday morning? My days are –
Wednesday.
It was yesterday morning. I went down there. They did have the egg still yesterday, right? Do I have that right?
I don't think so.
I think yesterday
it was like a quiche or something.
Oh, that's a rough call. So the egg – now, I was up you guys on Tuesday. I was down there like right whenever it opened, like 6:30 or whatever. And I always get a little nervous when I see the scrambled egg, like in water. I understand that how they cook them, but like – I don't know. I like to have a little bit of a drier egg. So I did
pass.
I got
you on that.
I think any time if you go with a scrambled egg at a restaurant thing and then you have some sort of hash brown, because then you can hot sauce it and salt and pepper, that's the win. That's the breakfast buffet that you're looking for, my friend. Did you guys did you guys get to Elmo's for lunch?
No, we did not get to Elmo's for lunch.
One job.
No. Wait, dude, we've been a little busy here this morning.
Oh, for
Christ. We had to tape a couple interviews. There was some podium stuff going on.
Who was at the podium?
Just trying to pack up stuff. Players. We got players at podiums.
Like prospects?
Yeah. And, you know, we got to help out the league. Everybody that's at Media Row has to do certain tasks to help, like whether it's transcripts
league.
Or recording stuff. Uh-huh. Or everybody's got – it has to have a couple assignments. And that way you can share everything.
Sure.
So when we draft someone, we can go back and we can pull their presser and all that stuff.
See.
So
I see. Okay.
So it's our getaway day. So we're trying to pack everything up and get everything squared away. The good news was, about 20 minutes before the show, this gentleman comes around the corner and he's wearing a tuxedo, and he has a tray of shrimp cocktails.
Good.
They have like their own social media people. Yep. And they're like, would you guys like this? I go, everybody stand up. Everybody get in this. We're all doing this together. Because I believe I was the only one that has ever had a shrimp cocktail from St. Elmo's.
Yeah.
Well, so everybody, Kelsey, Fila, Griff, Uno, Chris,
this was
myself.
Virgin experience for all of them.
All of them.
Oh, boy.
All of them.
Did they do a typical Elmo's or was it not?
The shrimp is loaded.
Yeah.
Like there's one shrimp. There's one shrimp.
Oh, they just, give you the one.
On the little plate.
Okay.
But it is smothered. Smothered being the word of the day.
How
given
smart
your hash
were the
browns.
Kids on the how to take that in?
Well, I promptly proceed to say, like they're filming this. I promptly proceed to say, you want to take a small bite.
That's
you
right.
Don't want to go big here.
No.
Like that horseradish can come back, and then you're not tasting anything. You're not smelling anything. Or you could just almost die like Bishop did at dinner a couple of years ago. True story, Shook. It almost happened. Like we had to like slam him on the back to like get him to stop coughing.
Oh, I almost
It was bad. The guy in the tuxedo goes, I mean, you could do that, but the Bears crew around the corner, I mean, they had no problem taking the whole thing down. Well, now at this point,
now it's a man.
Griff
now we're
and Tequila
a man
are
and
like,
woman.
We're going all the way now. We can't let this happen. I'm like, I think this is a very bad idea. I'm not doing this.
No.
Go ahead and demasculate me all you want.
Sure.
I need to be able to taste food four days from now.
Yeah.
Well, it hits, and Uno's like, I don't really like horseradish. I'm like, well,
this ain't for you.
Get ready. Buckle up. But he's in. He did it. He pulled it off. The two just throw the whole thing down the gullet. And it was like the first 30 seconds, I was like, if this gets worse, we're going to have a problem. I don't know about the live stream, and I don't know about, I don't know what's going to happen here. They're both coughing, their eyes are watering, they're like, holy, I'm like, yeah, I'm aware of the situation.
Oh, that's great.
They rallied. All of a sudden, they're like, all right, it's like kind of a cooling sensation, and it's feeling better. And everybody enjoyed it. I was like, everybody got a little shrimp cocktail. So we worked out great.
That's great. So they got it, so that's a win, and away you go, and then you'll drive home.
Exactly. We had Iorias last night. We had some fantastic Italian.
There you go.
It was good.
Had a it's few quiet drinks. Over there, isn't it? I mean, I was looking this morning, like there's nothing newsy that I saw.
So Uno and I were putting together the rundown, and we both kept saying, there is nothing going on at this combine from a news standpoint. Like, we're all just in a holding pattern if Justin Fields is going to get traded or not.
No, I don't recall one like it. I mean, I was this morning, obviously, I was doing my morning works, and I'm looking at, and I'm like, well, let's do a segment or two and kind of update everything that's happened over in Indy. And there really wasn't anything new. Like, the big stuff happened Monday. Andrew AB, kind of said everything out loud on Tuesday. So by yesterday, when Coach had spoken about all of those things, it was just stuff that was already out there from AB.
Yeah,
there wasn't much there. We had the Denzel maneuver yesterday, but everything else is quiet.
It's been very quiet, and I think it's been quiet across the league. I mean,
seems like it.
I've got a couple like the 10 top takeaways from the first couple days of the combine, and I'm like, I think we might talk about three or four of these.
Yeah, it's quiet.
I don't think we're even going to talk about all 10 because it's not really that big a deal.
Don't you think the Bears thing kind of is the? I felt like that on Tuesday morning. I felt it like it, honestly, Monday night when we went to dinner and just talking to people. And then throughout Tuesday and even yesterday, like, everyone's just kind of waiting on that.
Yeah.
Like, once that happens, whatever that's going to be, then everyone can kind of have a reaction to that action. Because right now, it is. It's a holding pattern in terms of the roster movement and shuffling. It just hasn't happened.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, there's not a lot. It's very quiet. Now, Media Row is still pretty packed, which I was surprised by because I thought today would be a big moving day. It sounds like starting tonight and then tomorrow morning everybody's out.
Is there how many are teams and how many are like still remaining of like the media?
There's more radio here than I thought.
Yeah, there was more in it yesterday, I noticed. Like Nashville had a couple of stations.
There's an Asheville radio station here, which I did not have on the card.
Ohio?
Asheville, North Carolina.
Oh, Ashland, Ohio. Asheville, North Carolina.
Asheville.
What would they be jumping onto? Like,
is that Titans football?
Carolina, maybe? Or I don't know the geography of North Carolina well. It's a hole in my resume.
We could be not way sure. off.
I don't know where it is. I don't know if it's near, like, Charlotte or if it's could be anywhere. Could be near Atlanta. I have no idea.
I don't really know the answer to this.
I don't know. I've never been.
Yeah, but there are definitely – I mean, there's a number – you can definitely tell there's empty tables and people that have that are done for the week. But it will be – I think you'll be able to count on two hands tomorrow the number of people that are still here at Media Row.
Yeah, I think
Asheville.
Whoa.
Asheville, 2 hours from Charlotte.
Pretty aggressive.
So they're probably Panthers people.
It's very aggressive out of Uno. Almost as aggressive as waddling around with that lemon drop last night. In his, was
good,
he in a suit jacket?
No, he was in a button-down.
Well, good.
They were dressed accordingly.
Good. You got to be. Hey, this was the coolest damn thing. The great Jim Donovan ringing the bell. And his cancer treatments are over. Obviously, Jim is near and dear to us and not only just as the voice and the job he does there, but what he means to us personally. And I know you, Gibby, personally, and this show. I mean, like, that's some of the most fun that I ever have is anytime he's on and want to know how the ponies are doing. So the ponies are going to have daddy's home and he's done with cancer treatments. And that's,
and
that was a
wood.
Tremendous, very, yeah, true, very, very cool.
Yeah. Knock on wood. Everything will be good. So I reached out to him probably about 4:30 yesterday. And I was like, if I'm doing the math right in my head, again, public school kid.
Yeah.
I'm thinking today is the last day. Do I have that? And he sent me that video. And it was.
Oh, that's beautiful.
It was awesome. Couldn't be happier for him and his family, his wife Cheryl, his daughter Megan, and couldn't be happier for him. I know the last few weeks have been a little tough, but, you know, he's a pro and you never know it. So he guts through it, and we are done with the treatments, and now we, you know, hopefully everything is good and stays that way for quite some time to come.
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome stuff. And he's just the best. He simply is the best, provided some of the most magical moments this year were where he was directly involved with. All right, we've got a lot to get to on the program today. We have a Z Carrucci reunion bomb. I mean, it's story time with Uncle Vic is what we have for you.
It is, but
great.
It's actually
pretty
really
great.
Good because Vic
not
takes
surprised.
You, yeah, Vic takes you behind the curtain on the whole Hall of Fame voting.
Yeah.
And, you know, some of the big picture stuff, he can't go into a lot of detail, but he talks about the whole thing with Hester and special teams. And then it's a breakdown of our new OC, Ken Dorsey. And
nice.
Talking about the Bills, talking about the Browns, the league in general. It is a bomb. It's a love fest, but it is a bomb.
Vic just been around so long. And has so many different angles that, I mean, he's worked from the news side of it. He's worked for teams. He's done everything. So he has every angle of it covered. So you have that to look forward to. Kelsey Russo, is this her debut?
On CBD, it is.
I think it's her Cleveland Browns Daily debut.
It is.
So we're going to have that.
She did a radio network spot in the middle of the season and just wanted to let her get her feet wet in the season stuff and just, you know, figure she joined in progress and it was on the treadmill at a 10 incline. I feel like so. She's been here all week, and she'll
and she's got Jordan Reed later on ESPN. So draft analyst Jordan Reed will join her a little bit later in the program. Nick Shook is going to join us from Radio Row coming up in about a half hour from now. And so there you go. So we'll put this thing into perspective. Take a look at some of the big takeaways. As I mentioned, I think probably the biggest takeaway is a very quiet combine. That's the, you know, and I understand the other thing you got to remember, Gibby, is like. It's kind of two combines, right? Because you're talking about you have this part where the coaches and general managers talk, but like the players haven't gotten on the field. That happens tonight, for the first time.
There's actually some happening now, I believe.
Okay, so it's already rolling.
Yeah, I think NFL Network coverage starts at 3:00. Our good friend Chris Rose will be anchoring that.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But I believe they've already started some drills on the field here.
Okay. So. All right. So that now this second part is going to pick up and. We'll see. You'll be curious like how those – so the first three quarterbacks are not throwing. So Williams, May, and Daniels are not throwing, but the next
Great.
Three are. So that would be McCarthy, Nix, and Penix. So if there are six first-round quarterbacks, the other three are throwing, and we'll see how those guys do. But it all kind of centers around what the Bears do and what their timeline kind of is on how they handle the quarterback situation. All right, Kelsey going to join us next, going to get a recap on what she learned from our general manager, from our head coach, and we're off and running. You listen to Cleveland Browns Daily on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet, now live in Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
And it's Bo here for my great friends at James B. Beam Distilling Company. Booker knows vision for Knob Creek was to have the embodiment of full-flavored American whiskey through age-proof and flavor, create a product that sets the standard, and Knob Creek has done that. It is a champion for those who stay true to their craft, know what they like, don't feel the pressure to conform. Now through April 30th, don't forget to take advantage of the Knob Creek Steak Rebate. So you get a rebate when you buy a Knob Creek bourbon plus a steak. Just upload a picture of your receipts to knobcreeksteakrebate.com. They'll send you $20 right to your Venmo account. Must be 21 to participate. See full terms and conditions at knobcreeksteakrebate.com. Knob Creek's Kentucky Straight Bourbon Whiskey, 50% alcohol by volume, 2024 James B. Beam Distilling Company, Claremont, Kentucky. Knob Creek, drink what tastes right. All right, as we head back to the Combine over in Indianapolis, Kelsey Russo joining us, staff writer here. First Combine for you, right?
Very first Combine, yes. It's been very fun and kind of cool to see it all actually in action, as I've heard about it over the years. So it's cool to be here.
And you were, prior to joining us, you were covering the Cavs with The Athletic, and so you had been around the NBA world and seen how All-Star games happen and those type of things. I always tell people when they ask, Kels, it's hard to understand how big the NFL feels to everybody else and how small it feels when you get to Indy, because the whole league is in, what, like a 2-square-mile radius for a week?
It was just wild, yeah, and you just run into people as you're walking through the convention center, or you're going to dinner, or just at your hotel, and everybody is here. And I think that's a really cool aspect of it, though, of yeah, it does feel smaller and feels more like you get to know people from around the league and make connections and everything. And it's so that's like the really cool opportunity about it for us, is like also getting to see the prospects, but being able to do to network and be a part of it as well.
Hi.
Thank you, man.
I guess I'm talking. You just
Well, you had a headset on, so I'm watching.
No, no.
I'm here. You're there.
You're
it looked
fine.
Like you were eager. We can do it all. We can have a three conversation.
Yeah, I was letting you go. So
did you get to see Gibby in his action? Have you seen his lurking? How he lurks on guests? Have you seen that?
I haven't had to lurk a lot this week.
I know. I was disappointed. You only had Zagura for a day, so you had to really get a lot of it done at one time. Like, did you have to lurk Chris Sims at all?
No. I reached out to Chris in advance. He saw me coming from a mile away on Tuesday. He was like, I know, Gibbs. I know. Just come get me.
That's so
I'm
great.
Like, okay, what about this time? He goes, do we have to do it today? I go, yeah, Zagura's only here today.
It has to be.
Yeah, because he's got obligations. And
yeah.
He's living his
on assignment.
Life.
He's on
sure
a, it's
he
a, it's a good assignment, to be fair. It's a very, very good assignment.
I was hoping for rain all week, but I don't think I want to do that for the people he's playing with.
No, I don't think you should wish for that at all.
No,
Kels,
not at all.
What did you make of Let's go back to AB's availability first. We'll get to Kevin's. What did you make of AB and some of the choices? Obviously, the headlines were back to the Greenbrier, the dual practices with the Vikings. What are some of the things that stood out and were noteworthy to you?
Yeah, I mean, obviously those two things, you know, starting off with the joint practices, because it's the fourth consecutive year that they've done them. So I think it's a really it was a big deal for them to talk about it here and say that they're wanting to host them. So they'll be in Berea and kind of what that means. So it's sort of, in a sense, running it back to how camp was last year in preseason. So it's just kind of an interesting element. And then to the Greenbrier as well. And I think that made a whole lot of sense because guys talked about that. Literally, they bring it up so organically throughout the season about just what the Greenbrier meant to them. And I think they saw how good it was for team chemistry and bonding and just like time they got to spend together. So I think everybody thought they were probably going back, but having it be official that that's what is happening in this during training camp was noteworthy. I think the other thing that AB talked about was that Deshaun's going to start throwing again in March, which I think is a big deal for fans and just kind of knowing his progress with his shoulder injury. And then the fact that Kevin and Ken Dorsey are going out to LA to visit him next week, I think is an important step in the offseason. And, you know, Ken getting to know Deshaun and them spending time together, see where he is and just kind of helping move this offseason along. So, but I thought that from AB was pretty noteworthy to hear in front of the podium. So this kind of stood out to me.
Bo, Kelsey has not gone and had the Greenbrier experience. She had not started yet. She started in season.
You and me
the Wednesday
both.
Before the first game.
you and me both. Well, I'll give you – I mean, I've been to the Greenbrier before with my family, not with the team last year. It's a spectacular property. I will say that it is pretty wildly colored in terms of the sides of the walls,
the
decorations and the flooring and the decor is quite aggressive.
It is.
So it's a little – you've seen the movie Anchorman?
Yes.
Okay. It's a little bit like when Fantana brings out the cologne and he goes, it's quite repugnant. Like sometimes it starts out like you think, well, maybe I could handle this. But by like day four, you're like, my God, I feel like I'm in the Cat in the Hat or something, man. It's crazy the way that it all goes out there. So no, but you get it. And you're right. I mentioned that to Kevin yesterday when we had him on the show. Like, and every time organically the guys would talk, they do that on their own. They just bring it up. You'd be like, how'd you get through all this? It was like there was something that was forged down there that traveled, and it allowed for the success amidst incredible, incredible obstacles, you know, all season long. You mentioned the Deshaun part of it, and I knew that we tried, but I knew Kevin and AB, neither one was going to be – we're not going to pin him down to, like, where's he at in all of this. But that's really the off-season question. The rest of it is going to sort itself out. Like, they're going to be aggressive in free agency. We know that. They're going to be fine in the salary cap. We know that. They always are. We talked to AB on Tuesday, and he told Zagura and I, look, like, you know, I'm 3 years ahead is where he is on the cap. So they know what they're doing on all that. The one thing they can't control is the health and the ability to get back to what he was of number four. And that's, again, in a way, Kels, it's kind of – and I know you weren't with us last year, but it very much kind of feels like last season all over again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. And it just raises a lot of questions of, like,
sure.
And like you said, you can't control health. And, you know, they continually say that he's progressing, doing all the steps, and we've seen that. And I think that is what you have to rely on in this situation of just hoping that he continues to progress the way that he needs to. And that when he's healthy and can come and comes back, that he's able to produce the way that he needs to, that they saw in, you know, in Texas and why they traded for him in Houston. And what they're hoping for when they got him here. You know, obviously, like, last season was obviously up and down, you know, with, like, dealing with the injury. But we saw moments where he looked like who he was in Houston. And I think that's the hope, that you get back to that point. But I think their dedication to the way that they're, you know, going down to visit him and his dedication to his rehab process is important and is – it's good to know these things at this point in the off season so early, because we have 6 months before training camp. We have 6 months or more before preseason.
I would prefer more.
Yep, same.
I would prefer a lot.
It's going to be here quick.
It is going to be here very fast.
Don't
blink. But like all of that time is really good for him to just continually to take steps. And so I think that's the hope, is that he'll be there, obviously, by the time we get back from camp.
I think the other big thing that needs to happen with the staff, in addition to Ken Dorsey and Coach going out to meet with QB1, is Kevin Stefanski's got a brand-new offensive staff.
Mm-hmm. Sure does.
I mean, outside of Chad O'Shea, I mean, he's got a lot of new bodies, mm-hmm. and all of those bodies need to gel here over the next couple months.
100%. And I think it was cool that Kevin mentioned yesterday that, you know, the staff's out here. Obviously, they're here at the combine. Mm-hmm. They're helping scout and everything. But they're also in meetings together. And I think that's really cool if they're spending this time. You know, they're really diligently working to rebuild, in a sense, the offense, you know, from the run game to the pass game to all of the elements that are a part of this. And when you have so many different perspectives coming in with new coaches, you have to have that time together to really just to gel and to get on the same page and figure out a way to build an offense that makes sense with your talent that you have. And I think it was cool that they're all here, not only scouting, but they're also working on what they want the offense to look like. And they're starting now, and they have been doing so when, you know, back in Berea.
Well, and you got when I had Kevin on yesterday, we were talking about that, and I asked, look, it's not like he had an issue with the guys who are here.
Right.
He likes a lot of those guys and still remains close, and it wasn't that at all. But you could also see that there was some juice for him because he's an information guy. He's a learning guy. He doesn't always never's going to sit on his laurels. And so when I asked him the question about all these new faces and what can you learn from them, he kind of lit up. Mm-hmm. And you understand, because you want to be inspired again. You want to hear new messages, new thoughts, new all of those things. And so I do think that, you know, he's 2-time NFL Coach of the Year. Like, he knows what he's doing. But at the same time, like, even somebody like that, you get some juice to hear some new ideas.
Yeah, 100%. I think it just, it's a perspective. And, you know, it's maybe he has an idea, but then, you know, Ken or Deuce or somebody brings just they add a tidbit, and then you find kind of a different angle, a different wrinkle to your offense, and there's just a way to you can tweak it that maybe you didn't think about because you didn't have that perspective. So I think it's all good things. It's a really exciting time for them, I think, and yeah, like you said, like they loved the staff that was here. Guys got opportunities other places, mm-hmm. which is great. That's what you want to see, guys get their opportunity to coach and move up. And so, you know, now you build a staff and you build an offense that can take you where you want to go next year. And I think they have the pieces to do that, which is really cool.
Don't sleep on Tommy Rees, mm-hmm. either. Just talking to people in the college game, like, know a couple of guys when he was on the Notre Dame staff. And that dude has a smart mind, man. He was really good at Notre Dame. He was really good last year at Alabama. Like, Jalen Milroe was a guy who was benched earlier in the season, and once they recommitted to him, he played himself into almost being a Heisman finalist type guy, and they end up playing for a national – or losing to Michigan in the national semifinal. But that so much of that was what he did offensively and how he moved on the fly. And everybody I've talked to is really, really high on Tommy Rees, so I think that's a very good one as well. Anything else from Coach that jumped out to you over the last couple of days since yesterday, Kel?
I'm trying to, the conversation we had actually about just tweaking offenses and just kind mm-hmm. of and the offensive game in general moving forward, I thought really stood out to me. And just it was funny because like somebody asked him about how do you want to see the offense like in the league change? And he was like, well, I'm not going to tell you because then that would, you know, give away what we're doing. But it was cool to see the way that, you know, they are obviously like always looking forward to the future and how they can be better. And I think it's really cool that that's where they're focusing at, is how you can tweak the offense, make changes to, like, with personnel, find different avenues. And he said too that he, you know, talks to Jim Schwartz a lot, which makes mm-hmm. sense of you pick Jim's brain to see what defenses are doing against offenses to make your offense better. And I thought that was really interesting, especially you see how we saw last year how and in his whole career, but how good our defense was and how good Jim is in those moments. And so being able to pick his brain to then make your offense better is just going to make it that much stronger. So that really stood out to me.
Yeah, me too.
And I also like to, you know, I got a chance to ask him just about developing draft picks and, you know, looking because of our situation, you know, their situation where we have, they have a second, third, two fifths, two sixths, and a seventh. So these later draft picks, like obviously there's so the names here, people are focusing on the first round, the quarterbacks, those top guys. But for the Browns, like, that's not where they're at. And so this is a really good opportunity for them to get face time with these guys that are later in later rounds, you know, maybe, and get to know them more personally. And yes, it's a short window of time in these interviews and meetings, but it's that face time that I think is super valuable. That's kind of starts that trend is like, you know, they're here and then they can bring guys in for those 30 visits or they do Zoom calls and then you get to pro days and then you get to the draft. And I think all of those opportunities really lend itself to then when AB and them make their picks, they have a good idea. And so, it just was like really interesting to talk about how the development of later draft picks, how, you know, yes, they're a second, third, fifth round guy, but they can get production out of them and they can be contributors on the field in, you know, in their rookie season, a couple seasons, et cetera, like we've seen, you know, last year and everything. And so hearing that perspective, I think, was really interesting, especially just considering their situation and where they are in the draft this year.
To your point, they have to. They have to hit on those guys. They have to hit on some of those guys because 100%. We can't pay everybody. You know, we're having to pay a lot of people. And that's what happens when you draft good players and they develop into great players and Pro Bowlers and all of that stuff. Like, everybody has to get paid and you can't keep everybody. And so you need to find a DeJuan Jones. You need to find those type of players who can become – Donovan Peoples-Jones is a great example of it. It was a guy who was a real contributor in his time here. That's a sixth-round pick. So that's – not everyone's going to be that – not every sixth-round pick's going to be that good, but some of them need to be because otherwise you can't build a roster in this league the way that the salary cap is built. Great stuff, Kels. Good talking to you.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
Very good. And you'll have the interview with Jordan Reed coming up in the second hour of the program. Don't miss Billy Joel and Rod Stewart. They're together for the first time. It's Friday, September 13th. Gibby, I'm not sure if you're aware of this. It's at Cleveland Browns Stadium.
I was not.
The tickets are on sale
right now.
I've
heard rumors.
You can get them right now. You visit clevelandbrownsstadium.com, and then it's you have to put in /BillyandRod2024 for more information. If you do that, you then can buy tickets for Billy Joel and Rod Stewart. They're together for the first time ever, Friday, September 13th. It's Billy Joel, Rod Stewart.
Griff's mind.
He didn't know.
No.
He didn't know.
He knows
he had
now.
No idea. Well, now he does.
We're
he also
educated.
Now, hopefully he knows after birding with me on Tuesday night, he now understands the importance of getting off of a bad bird and upgrading your bird.
He is aware. He has talked about this nonstop. It might have been the highlight of his combine week.
I don't know what has been big on social for us, but I'm telling you, if you had video on that, that wins. That wins. You want a viral moment?
Next
you want
year.
Your clicks? Well, I won't be there, but Griff can, and I'll be there in spirit. Like you could FaceTime me as he's
all right.
As he's going. You
sure.
FaceTime me.
Sure. We'll see you here next year.
No, you will not.
Yes.
Kels, good stuff. Great. We got 10 takeaways. Some of the highlights from the again, it's been a quiet week, but we'll get into some of the news that was made this week coming up next. You listen to Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet, sports betting partner, your Cleveland Browns, now live in Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet, now live in Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
When a medical mistake caused your injury, call the medical malpractice attorneys at 1-800-ELK-OHIO. Elk & Elk is a proud partner of your Cleveland Browns. Some news from the comment. As we mentioned, it's they're not a ton. In fact, the 10 takeaways from NFL.com from the combine and some of the availabilities. Where do you stand with some of this stuff, Gibby? I hate to be repetitive, but it really is Bears, and then I would say it's next, it's Broncos.
So, I think what's flying under the radar, and this was on NFL.com, and I tend to agree with it, that it looks like Chris Jones is finished in Kansas City.
That's wild.
They want to keep him, but now they're going to – it's reported the Chiefs granted corner Legarius Sneed permission to seek a trade with the idea that they would use the non-exclusive franchise tag to, like, work out a deal which would make Jones a free agent.
Yeah, I don't, it was interesting. Like, they had that, you know, at the parade, he's like, I'm going to be a chief forever or whatever. Like, there's enough money. If you're them, like, you have to keep him. He's dominant. Like, you have to keep him in the
You
mix,
won because of your defense and Patrick Mahomes, obviously.
Sure, but, yeah. No,
but that defense was the best that it had ever been under Mahomes and Andy Reid.
Yeah.
No, so,
no doubt. Spags is awesome.
Yeah, and you're going to get rid of L'Jarius Sneed, which I was like, wow, that's two big corner pieces. You can't afford to pay anybody? Because remember, when Mahomes signed that deal, it was very cap-friendly.
Oh, my God. Now it looks incredibly cap-friendly. It's $40 million a year.
Yeah.
It was 10 years, $400 million, so it's $40 million a year. Right now, that's nothing. That's
correct.
That's like what Baker's going to get.
Yeah.
You know? Like, it's nothing.
So, unless they're trying to work out a redo or a new deal, but I mean, number two, the Ryan Poles should trade Justin Fields. Yeah, I know.
He will. I didn't understand.
What are you going to get for him, though?
So, you know, in the conversation I had with Chris Rose yesterday, and he knows the Rams really well, and he talked about how, like, does that fit? What does Fields fit what they want? Because they're going to run the McVay offense. So can Fields do that? Because that's really not what he is. He's a runner and a deep thrower. So, like,
correct.
What does that work with what they're going to do? And if Atlanta, it seemed to me like Atlanta, and we said this even before, always hoping that Fields would end up there. It always seemed to me like Cousins is the perfect one for Atlanta. Like, he's the perfect table setter and place setter for them for whatever they're going to do going forward. Like, they could win the South right away with Cousins' play. The question is, do the Vikings acquiesce to that? The one thing that is interesting on the Bears, and I've heard several people over there talk about this yesterday about, like, Caleb Williams' dad's a problem. Albert Breer mentioned it on a podcast I was listening to on the way home yesterday. Like, the dad is the guy who's like, I want a percentage of ownership, like, all of this nonsense. Like, that's just got to get squashed right away. Like, I don't know how emphatically you can say this. The NFL does not need Caleb Williams at all.
Correct.
He could play another year at USC, go play in the whatever the XFL, UFL thing is. Good luck. They don't – it's fine. The league is fine. They're not worried about it. So that dude just kind of got to lock it up a little bit if you're to believe everything that's kind of out there on him. But to me, like, you're going to trade Fields if it's a two – Breer said a second day and a third day. So is that a 2 and a 4? Is it a 3 and a 6? You know, how does that deal get done? How quickly? Watch out maybe for New England on that.
Sure.
Maybe that's
absolutely. Just a couple real quick ones. It feels like Sean Payton can't wait to see Russell Wilson leave Denver. Mm-hmm. Kirk Cousins still makes the most sense in Minnesota at the right price. Mike Evans is going to want a lot of money. J.J. McCarthy is showing up as maybe the most intriguing quarterback prospect in this draft.
It's because he's throwing.
Yeah.
Orlovsky did that this morning, like he zagged. He was like, I'll take Jaden Daniels over Caleb Williams. Okay. I mean, this happens every year. I mean, remember, we were there a couple of years, like, with the Trevor Lawrence, and it was like, oh, Zach Wilson's better than Trevor Lawrence. Some teams have him graded higher. Okay, stop. Like, let's stop.
Yep, exactly.
Stop with the nonsense.
So, I mean, there were a couple other ones, but nothing crazy. I mean, Philadelphia needing to fix their culture. Duh.
Yeah.
Yeah, they got a problem there.
Yeah. Yeah, it certainly seems like it. I miss this. Tom Brady ran a better 40 time at 46 than he did at 22.
He posted it this morning, I believe, on social. And they had him, at, like, you know how they have them paired next to each other running? Oh, yeah, he smoked his 22-year-old self.
Well, all the lectins. He's not eating lectins anymore. Back in those days, he was crushing a lot of lectins. That's what happens. That's how all of that goes.
Exactly.
That's very good. All right, we'll get some perspective from Nick Shook, our old buddy, going to join us coming up next. You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet, sports betting partner of Cleveland Browns. Now live in Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet. Now live in Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
And be part of one of the most passionate fan bases in the NFL. Join NextGen STM, presented by Ticketmaster, the official waitlist of your Cleveland Browns. Being a NextGen STM, the best chance to become a season ticket member in future seasons. Visit clevelandbrowns.com/NextGenSTM to reserve your spot today. As we head back to Indy, our good buddy, NFL Network, NFL.com analyst, Nick Shook, shook. Live from Radio Row, seated right next to Gibbe. We were lamenting kind of the lack of news the last couple of days. You had the big pressers on Chicago, but they were, I mean, we all know they're trading him, but like they were kind of not much to that. The Sean Payton stuff was pretty interesting, but kind of a quiet week so far, right?
Yeah, it felt like we went through a number of different pressers, and it was just like, all right, well, I can pull that small bit out and do something off of that. I can pull a small bit from here. I can turn this into something that's palatable, but it's nothing that's popping. There's nothing that's making a ton of headlines. You're not seeing the ESPN ticker or whatever with a ton of headlines from here. So you're hoping that the player workouts dominate, but even a lot of the players haven't said anything super noteworthy. And you know what? Maybe that's just a product of some things are inevitable, and we also don't have as many dominant storylines right now, and that will transform over time. Because you know what happens? It's night is always darkest just before the dawn. It's quietest just before the storm. Some right. massive trade's going to happen that we didn't see coming. And
great.
We'll all have to deal with that. I don't know what it is, and I have no insight on that. But I'm telling you, I've done this long enough. Just when you're getting comfortable with the silence, it all blows up.
Can we make sure that it happens, like, not on a Saturday or Sunday?
Maybe on a month, like a nice Tuesday.
Because don't forget, like, right before free agency, a couple of years ago,
yeah,
our GM goes out and gets Amari Cooper. It was on a Saturday afternoon.
Yeah. I mean, this year, in the last 6 months, we had a coach fired at 1 a.m. Eastern.
Right.
In the middle of the week.
Remember that?
Yeah.
Try to block that out.
Yeah.
No, there was. You're right. There will be some stuff. It does feel like that. Do you think the conventional wisdom over there was the Bears have to do it first? Do you still kind of feel that way, having been in Indy all week, that they've got to do the Fields move before everything else kind of reacts to that?
Well, it's either that or they lose all leverage. I mean, you can't draft Caleb and have Justin Fields on your roster. What you get is a Baker Mayfield leaving Cleveland situation where you're just trying to get anything for him, and you trade him well after the draft for a fifth-round pick. And mm-hmm. you hope that you get more out of Fields if you're going to move him, which everybody at this point expects him to. You cannot willingly go in there and think that you're going to get anything for him if you have Caleb already on your roster. You've lost all leverage. And I think what you should do, and what would be important, helpful to them, is to create a little bit of a bidding war. Create a little bit of a race. Make the teams that are interested actually come to the table, because right now they could just wait them out. Ideally, if they think that nobody else is getting in line and is competing for him and the opportunity, and they have to outbid somebody, then they could just wait them out, and then suddenly you get them for pennies on the dollar. So hopefully
bidding
that doesn't happen for the Bears.
Who is the bidding war then? Conventionalism's Atlanta.
Yeah.
You hear Pittsburgh. You hear Vegas.
Yeah.
I always say keep an eye out for New England, because they can.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
You know what I mean? That, like, I could see them doing it. If they gave up a two or a three, it seems like a second and a third day pick is kind of what the standard seems to be for him, if that's what it is. Now, all of a sudden, they could take Marvin at three, and now they transform in a month. You know, you go from not having weapons to having a former first-round pick at quarterback who's got some legs that can make you scared, and a generational potentially receiver all in the matter of a couple of months. So watch out for them a little bit, I think.
Yeah, I'm of the belief that he can be reclaimed. I don't think he's that far off. I think it's very much dependent on situation. And the Bears have, you know, unfortunately not put him in a great situation throughout the course of his career. They've asked him to do too much. They haven't surrounded him with proper talent and blocking that he needs. Guys aren't getting open most of the year. They got DJ Moore, and it was a godsend, and they still had nobody else other than Cole Kmet that could consistently get open and catch passes. And for a brief period there, it felt like they were turning the corner before he suffered that injury. By the time he came back from there, it felt like they'd taken three steps back. He could never get back on track. It's the same thing about C.J. Stroud. They're different players with different strengths and weaknesses, right? But C.J. Stroud went to Houston in a situation where he had a franchise left tackle, he had talent at receivers, he had a new coach and an offensive coordinator that were willing to scheme to his strengths. And yes. What did we see as a rookie? He was fantastic. And I think that there is potential for Fields to do that again, but the situation's got to be right. And that's why I fear that he ends up in the wrong situation at the end of all of this, and then everyone who thinks that he should be out of Chicago is then confirmed in their belief.
I agree.
I mean, you know, ABP's, he's talented. You saw him in Columbus.
Yeah. Oh, I know, dude. AVP's in New England. I think that would be
a fun. Yeah,
that'd be fun. And yeah. I think AVP would do right by him. I do. But we'll see. So then the next thing is going to be Russ and Sean Payton. You can only say it so much without saying it, but he pretty much did. Like, so the question is, how quick? Are they the J.J. McCarthy landing spot? And then, obviously, they're going to be done with Russ. Where does he go? Is that a Pittsburgh? What's that look like?
The best part of this, though, is the fact that coach is done with him, but then the GM comes out and is like, we haven't gotten any phone calls.
They're not going to.
Well, he went first. George went first. It was like trying to make it act like people were calling. Yeah. And then Sean came second. It was like, it really doesn't matter. We're going to do something next week.
Yeah, because they can't continue at this rate. Like,
no.
And obviously there's no concessions made on the financial side, which understandable. You sign that contract. If you're Russ, you keep your leverage there. But it's an almost untradeable contract. So somebody's going to force somebody's hand, but they're not going to proceed forward. He got benched because of money last year. They can say it was football reasons, but there was a period there where they had reclaimed their season. They'd run off a bunch of wins. Mm-hmm. Russ was good enough in some of those games. He wasn't good enough in the first half of some of the games that followed. They lost a lot of those games. And then suddenly he was benched when they still had an outside shot. Mm-hmm. That told me it was not as much about football, but about the fact that they knew he wasn't going to be part of their future. And he doesn't command that money anymore, but you're going to have to bite that bullet if you're the Broncos of the contract that you signed him to. And then at this point, he can go anywhere. I mean, anybody that needs a veteran quarterback that's in need, because Denver is one of those places, and they're already moving on. Washington, could they be a place?
Please,
they need a quarterback
ahead.
Again.
Go to the NFC.
You know, there's a handful of those teams every year.
Because he wasn't bad this year.
No, he was decent.
He was okay at best.
I think it was like 26 touchdowns, 7 or 8 picks, 67% completions. Not a lot of nickel dime. Like
he didn't hurt them.
No, but he didn't hurt them. So like in a situation like Pittsburgh, like I don't want him there. But like in Pittsburgh where their quarterbacks were hurting them, all of a sudden they have a quarterback who didn't. Now you're on to something. So that's
That's true. Yeah.
That's kind of the tricky spot. Let's do one more quarterback, and that's Cousins. What does this look like? The Vikings seem like a team that's kind of in like the middle of all of it, and then not really bad enough to go to the bottom and not good enough to go win it all.
This is the one that I fear a franchise is going to make an overly ambitious decision that they're going to come to regret. And the worst part about it is that every reason as to why they should not make such a decision was just presented to them, and they dealt with it for half of a season. Every week it was, and especially down the back half, once the Josh Dobbs magic ran out, it was, who are we going to see this week? Nick Mullins? We're going to see Dobbs? We're going to go to Jaren Hall? And none of them were good enough. They got a up-close and personal look at what the future without Kirk Cousins is if they don't have a solid answer there. But they don't have a solid answer there now. Nothing I saw from any of those guys tells me that there's going to be an answer there. And so you have to run it back with the guy. Kirk Cousins finished in my top 10 in QB Index at the end of the year. He played half the year. Oh, and he finished there because he was playing some of the best football of his career at the time before he got hurt. He was the only good thing about the Minnesota Vikings for 6 weeks because they couldn't hang on to the football. He only had a few of those turnovers. They couldn't play defense well enough. He was the only positive silver lining from that team for the first 6 weeks of the season before they got back on track. And it was a bummer that he didn't finish the season. But you don't let that guy go. Sign him to a one-year deal. Sign him to a two-year deal because you don't have the plan in place. And as we all know, if you don't got a plan, you don't got a shot.
No. And as we were talking about Gibby yesterday, like with they also have the Justin Jefferson thing too.
Mm-hmm.
And Kwesi was quick to say, like, look, he's a blue chip. Like, we can't lose blue chips. Otherwise, what are you doing? Just being a farm system from everybody else?
Right.
But the pressure's on. You may not have that choice if you can't continue to provide things and put things around Justin Jefferson.
Yeah. And the thing is that they actually have a really intriguing core. I was not a fan of the way their roster was set up last year. I thought they were going to take a step back. They kind of exceeded my expectations for a stretch before falling back to earth after they lost Kirk Cousins. But what I like about their roster, there's a lot of young talent there. I think that they need to figure out running back, but they've got a couple of studs at receiver. The trade for Hockenson, you know, worked out pretty well in their favor until he suffered a bit of an injury. Their offensive line's good enough. There's pieces there. But there's no reason to just move on from Kirk Cousins because he's in his mid-30s and he's going to cost you some money. Like you run it back until you can't anymore, until something comes along that gives you the opportunity to say, now is the time to transition to a new quarterback. You don't just force that.
How much are they kicking themselves for not doing the Jefferson deal last year? Now you got an extra $30 million in cap space.
Mm-hmm.
His number
and now the contracts continue to rise.
His contract just went
way up.
Ship. I mean, the franchise tag's, $21 and change?
Yeah.
Yeah,
and they got that boost in the salary cap total, so that's just going to inflate every contract too.
That's what I mean. Like they cost themselves a lot by not getting that deal done sooner. What do you make of? Let's bring it back to our team that we talk about on a daily basis. Your Cleveland Browns. This was such a strange year, and we talked to the guys about it. It kind of feels like three different seasons all in one this year for the Browns. But this offseason, we just had Kelce, and I just said, look, like this might as well be last offseason. Like, I know they're going to get the cap stuff sorted out. I know that they're going to be aggressive in free agency and probably get most of the guys that they want in free agency. That's just what Andrew Berry does. But it just comes back to four. Like, can he get healthy and can he get back to what he was? And that's kind of what this whole offseason is going to be about. It almost feels like last year redo.
Yeah, that's exactly what it feels like. It's funny because you went through so many hurdles and the ups and downs, the highs and lows of this season, the thrill of reaching the playoffs when everything said you shouldn't. And yet you come back to the same point because you only got a little bit of a clue on what you needed a big answer on last year. I mean, the last few games that Deshaun Watson played were some of his best football as a Brown. His last game may have been his best game as a Brown. It seemed like he was just starting to turn the corner and settle in, and everything was coming together, and they'd gotten that big win over Baltimore on the road, and then his season's over. So was it a fluke? Is it a tease, or is it a sign of things to come? And we are not going to know. How does he heal from having a fractured glenoid? Like, that's not a very common injury.
Right.
On the throwing shoulder. These are all things that we still have to figure out and boxes that the Browns are going to have to check off along the way. And we will not know until week four, really. At that point, you get a first indicator of whether this is actually going to work out or not, which is a bummer. But I thought it was funny, AB said a couple days ago, you know, they have cap things that they still have to work through and everything else, but I can't keep money in my pocket. You know, he loves to make moves, right?
No.
I love that. He's an aggressive upgrader of the roster, and they do have areas that they need to address. But I was so impressed by what he did last year. It paid dividends in the defensive line. I think we talked about it a lot back then. Yeah. And I have full faith and confidence that he's going to nail it again, and they'll be in a good position again, and it all just comes back to your quarterback.
Yeah, it does. And that's the thing. When you're right. They do have – and it'll be that defensive line. And when I was talking to both him and Kevin this week, I think what last season proved for them is when they were hired, it was about building an organization top to bottom.
Yeah.
And what they built was true organizational depth.
Yeah.
To be able to draft the way that they've drafted in certain positions. Certainly would want maybe better drafting at receiver, better drafting in the middle of the defensive line. But in terms of the corners, the linebackers – the offensive line. I mean, they crushed all of that stuff to the point to where you're playing your fourth and fifth tackles at the end of the season.
And they're holding up. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that speaks to high-level, deep-end scouting. You know, like you said, organizational depth. But you know what? The beauty of it to me that I have come away with now, not being there every day, but seeing it from afar and then seeing it up close here, you talk about building an organization. It's visible in their personnel department. It's visible when Kevin Stefanski takes the podium and when Andrew Berry steps up there. There's a rapport and an understanding between media and executive that we have not seen in this town in the last 25 years, if we're being completely honest, because those guys only got 2 to 3 years at a time before they were gone. The next group was in. They don't have to prove themselves. They just got to the playoffs again. Yeah, they lost the playoff game. But they got to the playoffs when they shouldn't have been there, and they do nothing but continue to stay pretty competitive. Kevin Stefanski went from a guy that could have been on the hot seat this year to a guy who is firmly set in his spot with another Coach of the Year award in his pocket. That is because your organization is strong from top to bottom. And so more than anything, we could talk about roster, and especially this time of year, Browns fans, I know they love to spend time going down to the nitty-gritty and splitting hairs and really figuring out, oh, what's this scenario? But you got to sleep a little bit easier at night knowing that the building is no longer burning down like it once did.
No. Those are in the long rear view. I'll get you out of here on this, my friend. You've been going to Indy for a long time. A lot of combine days spent. Give me a place maybe to eat or have a cocktail that we don't talk about enough. What's some of your – is there a personal favorite of yours outside of the ones that we talk about all the time? What jumps out?
Well, because you always think about Elmo's, Prime, Nada. Is it Lockmiller's, which is like this hole in the wall kind of restaurant that's next to behind the Westin? It's like down an alley.
Yes.
That place makes a really good Reuben. Go there. There might be a kind of a funky smell in the air, and the clientele is a little varied, but go there.
Good.
It's a good time.
They know what they're doing.
Oh, yeah.
They know what they're doing. Great talking to you, buddy.
All right. Thanks for having me, man.
All right. That's the great Nick Shook of the NFL Network and NFL.com. Joining us from Indianapolis. Kel's going to go one-on-one with Jordan Reed, ESPN draft analyst, coming up next. You listen to Cleveland Browns Daily on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet, now live in Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Don't miss Billy Joel, Ron Stewart together for the first time ever. It's Friday, September 13th, Cleveland Browns Stadium. Tickets are on sale. Visit clevelandbrownsstadium.com/BillyandRod2024 for more information. Billy Joel, Rod Stewart together for one night only. And now our very own Kelsey Russo, one-on-one with ESPN draft analyst Jordan Reed.
Jordan, kind of starting off big picture, what are your overall thoughts about this draft class going in and being able to see them here this week?
Well, it is an offensive-centric draft. You know, everybody's going to talk about the quarterbacks at the top of the draft. The wide receiver class, I think, is very, very good. We could see as many as seven go in the first round, which is an astronomically high number. And then offensive tackle. Everybody wants to talk about the offensive tackle class, and rightfully so. It's a really good class.
Speaking of quarterbacks, there's talk about, you know, being 4 to 5 kind of in that range mm-hmm. going. I guess what are your thoughts about this quarterback class specifically, and who stands out the most to you about how this could end up in a couple months?
Yeah, well, there's going to be three guys at the top of the draft: Drake May of North Carolina, Caleb Williams, of course, of USC, and then Jaden Daniels of LSU. Those are your three guys that you're really going to hear about at the top of the draft. But that fourth guy gets really, really interesting, whether it's J.J. McCarthy of Michigan, Bo Nix of Oregon, Michael Penix of Washington is another name that a lot of scouts like quite a bit. So this quarterback class is really interesting. It just depends on which traits that you like the most with all those guys.
Kind of going back to looking at positions of strength and positions of weaknesses, what stands out about this draft class?
Yeah, well, once again, the quarterbacks, receivers, and offensive tackles, it's not a great defensive class. I don't think we're going to get a defensive player inside of the top 10, which is something that hasn't happened in a very, very long time. But I like the depth of this cornerback class. And there isn't that Devin Weatherspoon or Derek Stingley or Sauce Gardner. We don't have that type of guy in the top 10, but, you know, top 15, 20, late 20s, I think we're going to see a lot of guys fly off of the board.
What stands out about the cornerbacks?
Well, we got some athletic guys. If you like watching the 40, you better have your stopwatch ready just because these guys are going to fly. Kool-Aid McKinstry is one that I like in the back end of the first round, but there's going to be some other guys that really fly, whether it's Nate Wiggins of Clemson, Tyrion Arnold of Alabama is going to be a really good player, and then Quinyon Mitchell of Toledo is an underrated name to watch.
Now, shifting to the Browns, they have obviously later picks, but bigger picture, when you evaluate this draft class, what stands out about what could be positions of need for the Browns?
Well, once again, this is a really strong wide receiver class. I would love to see the Browns add another wide receiver just because they do have some weapons. Amari Cooper was phenomenal last year, but outside of that, Elijah Moore was a little bit up and down last year, but I would like to see them add another weapon to the room. So wide receiver, maybe somewhere on day two or day three, they could look to add one. Maybe even early on, they could look to add one too. So I think with the Browns, they just need to add another weapon in that room. And then also on the defensive side, edge rusher, they need somebody. They don't have a lot of depth there.
Looking at the state of Ohio, you know, Marvin Harrison stands out as from OSU. Yeah. There's a lot of OSU kids here this week, but him specifically, what just stands out the way that he is able to have such an impact, and him not participating this week, how does that affect things moving forward?
Well, he's the best player in the draft to me. That's how highly I think of Marvin Harrison Jr. He's not going to test here, unfortunately. We'll see what he ends up doing at the pro day, but if he doesn't do anything at pro day, it's completely fine with me. The tape is the tape at this point, but 6'4", 215 pounds, he moves. He's a big receiver that has the movement skills of a smaller wide receiver. There isn't anything that he can't do. He makes miraculous catches. He sinks his hips really well and gets in and out of his routes. In the end, he has fantastic hand-eye coordination to go up and catch the ball too.
Do you think that there could be a shift, I guess, when it comes to guys not participating this week? Or is this maybe a one-off kind of situation because he did participate last year in the pro day it wasn't eligible, but when he participated with CJ last year. So do you see that as a potential change in the future?
For the higher ranked guys, I can see it becoming a trend just because they're going to tell scouts, just look at the tape and watch what I did throughout the season. There's no reason I don't have anything to gain from performing anything at the combine. I think Marvin definitely is in that tier of players. So I think it's more so of your guys that probably are projected to go somewhere in the top 15 to 20 to where we could see them not participate in the combine moving forward. But day two and day three players, I don't think they're going to be able to afford to do that.
Last one, I think, for you. Who's a prospect that, you know, maybe is kind of underrated in your eyes that could really use this week to help his stock and really stand out come drafting?
Ooh, he put me on the spot. One name I really like is Ricky Pearsall of Florida. He's one name that I like quite a bit. Transferred over from Arizona State to Florida, and he was an instant impact type of player. And I'm sure you have seen this highlight. You probably haven't noticed it was Ricky Pearsall, but he had a miraculous one-hand catch against UNC Charlotte down the seam. And I think he's going to be able to make those types of plays on the next level. So Florida wide receiver Ricky Pearsall, remember that name.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Jordan, for your time.
Thank you, as always.
All right, there's Kelsey Russo talking to ESPN draft analyst Jordan Reed. We thank both of them for their contributions there. Z and the Godfather, Vic Carucci, coming up next. You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet, now live in Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
What a treat. The Godfather, the man who birthed Cleveland Browns Daily from his loins and received his official Cleveland Browns Daily hoodie earlier today, the one, the only, the notorious VIC, Vic Carucci.
First of all, great to be here and great to have you. Secondly, highlight of my combine week is seeing that sweatshirt, that hoodie, which I will wear with great pride, but knowing the backstory, like how this thing has been put, and it's not just your average hoodie. This thing's got the material.
Yeah, there's even like a string you can like pull down in the back to keep it nice and taut. It's,
and I think it may have been made in Italy.
You are right.
Which is, you know, perfect for
me. Secured after a lengthy search by the great Brad Mellon.
I love it.
Equipment manager of the year in the National Football League. And he sourced it. This is it's like a Nike fashion collab. Crazy. Don't wash it.
Don't wash it.
That's what he said. Okay. So wear it and then let it.
Wear
it. Don't get any stains on it.
Okay.
But he said washing it.
Clean it.
It's a delicate fabric.
Delicate fabric. Yeah. I will treat it.
There are only four.
I feel special.
You should have it.
Thank you.
There is no CBD without you.
Well,
you're the Carucci in the sea.
I love this. I love being with you. What's going on, man?
We're good, man. We're good. When was the first year you came to the combine?
So, 1987-ish. I think it was the first year here was like 86. I hope I'm getting this right. I'm sure someone's Googling it, but I want to say it was no later than probably 87. 88 sounds a little too late. So 87, and there probably were a dozen of us at the Crown Plaza Hotel. The drill was get a room, get a hotel room, find a place to stay, and then camp yourself at the Crown Plaza where the prospects were. It wasn't about what this has turned into with especially like the coaches made available and all that. It was strictly talk to the prospects, which we did, and it was – And it was so unsophisticated that you'd ask a player to get another player to bring him out to the – and we'd do it in the restaurant of the hotel. And, hey, could you go fetch so-and-so for us? And, you know, we'd be standing – and it would be Len Pasquarelli and Howard Balzer.
Okay.
Yeah.
John McClain.
John McClain.
Peter King.
Peter King. It was a lot of OGs at this group. Rick Gosselin.
Uh-huh.
And it was one of those guys who had told me, you know, I said, so what do you do in the off season? You go, well, go to the combine. Now, even before that, it was in Dallas. Gil Brandt, of course, Gil Brandt was the godfather of that. And that was the original concept. And even in the early days. That's a good point. The original concept, Nathan, was that this would be the centralized place, the number one, and it's still probably one of the most important elements of it, was to get medical information gathered and collected. And that was what the scouts and coaches were most concerned about. Like, what are we really getting here in health, in terms of health? Now, again, big for that to be here. And I think over the years, the hospitals in Indiana have formed such a great partnership with the people who run this combine. And you wonder in some other cities, they've talked about it moving to maybe back to Dallas, to Los Angeles, that you'd have the same, but it's not, it would never be as centralized.
Yeah, that's why it's so great. So you're approaching your 40th combine.
Feels, something like that. And every, I will say every year it feels a little bit different because, first of all, you see the changes, especially in the coaching ranks and the team ranks, in the media ranks. I mean, we're in this massive area, which you asked me back in the 80s, could I picture something like this however many years later, 30-some-odd years, almost 40 years later? No way. No way did I see it growing like this. But what would happen is sports writers, especially, this is back before it became, you know, more multimedia, it was growing in that way, but mostly convincing their editors that, you know what, it's a reasonable spend from the budget to send me to this event. I'll get you draft prospects that will backload all the stuff we need for the draft. Plus, we'll talk to other people around the league and we can gather quotes and it's content heaven.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I've been – this is probably like 12 for me maybe in that range, 10. Well, we had the COVID year, so probably 11. When I first came, it was – the media row was in the concourse of the stadium.
Yes.
And there were maybe a handful of teams that came.
CBD, we set up there,
we were
right?
Set up. Yeah.
No, maybe a handful of teams. And that's the other trend, of course, that, you know, we're one of the core original teams
media.
That had its own radio and of course video, but that too growing added to that, and then the NFL or the combine organizers realized we don't have enough room for all these people, and it was getting. And I will add this. That more than a few coaches and executives and the occasional team owner that shows up said, not necessarily love the idea that it's that convenient for these guys to run us down in the hallway and grab us for interviews here, which, of course, led to a more organized, I'm pointing in the direction of where those press conferences are, more organized way of doing that.
So when you come out here, obviously you've got a Bills focus. You have the Browns in your heart. What are some of the big stories just NFL-wide that you're interested in? Because coming here, the thing I like about it the most is, you know, a lot of the information you get happens late at night.
Right.
And you're able to go and talk and kind of find things out. So what are some of the things that you're interested in?
Well, you hit the key, and that is the networking ability. And you do get a more relaxed – there is no time during a football season when you're going to have the people who make these decisions as relaxed – As they're capable of being. They're the most paranoid humans in the world, football people. I found that out long ago. But capable of kind of chilling a little bit and maybe over an adult beverage somewhere, and you just kick back and have a conversation. It doesn't necessarily have to be a formal interview that you're going to quote the person.
On the record
right. You're getting good download and good background. That's one thing. But as far as the issues are concerned, Nathan, I mean, you know, you don't forget that you are here to try to get a feel for the draft. This is usually when most of my homework gets done, or preliminary homework, to get a best feel. I can't say that before this I can tell you, other than the top line names, who are the prospects to look for. But when you're starting to dig deep into the positions, and you're like a team like the Bills that I'm mostly covering, 28th pick, you got to really kind of know the depth of, say, wide receiver.
Well, we don't pick till 52nd.
There you go.
It's even straight year without a first round pick.
More of a challenge. But that all said, I think it's getting the depth of that. I think, are there going to be some the competition committee, and that's another change that's happened. This is the beginning. Portion of the intense work that they do right through the league meeting. So Sean McDermott, the Bills coach, is on that committee for the first time. And it's been interesting talking to him about what's being discussed in those rooms. I think they had their third meeting today of this combine. And he referenced player safety issues, but it was interesting without revealing too much of what's going on behind those closed doors. He made a point of bringing up kickoffs.
Yep.
And I think we all know that it's a play that's been downsized so much or minimized so much that you wonder, is it going to be just taken out of the game? It sounds like the reverse is happening.
Which is good.
We want to find a way to make an exciting, interesting play more relevant.
Yeah, and it sounds like the XFL rule is possibly they're looking at, because you had a Super Bowl where there were 13 kickoffs and zero were returned.
Right, Right.
And that's exciting. Devin Hester is getting inducted in the Hall of Fame this year. He's the greatest returner of all time.
And you know, as a member of that selection committee, I was happy to see that because
he should have been in immediately. In my opinion.
Well, and I was happy to see it happen to see it for him, even though it's a different guy. But Steve Tasker for the Buffalo Bills has, I think, been a long overlooked, and there's been a prejudice against special teamers because of the amount of or how little they're on the field. And when the decision comes, are you picking a guy who's on the field for five plays versus the guy who's on the field for 50 plays? And how do you rectify that in your mind? Well, you know what? It's the impact and the game changing. And he changed the game. He influenced how teams function in their kicking game. So I'm talking about Tester, but now I think you could say the same about Tasker. Now he's in that senior pool, but that might happen. Back to the other thing about what this combine is about.
This is real quick. I find this Hall of Fame. You got me thinking. So.
All right, sure.
You know, Dion was complaining that now there are too many people in the Hall of Fame, and there should be the special wing for the best of the best, which.
Yeah, the Hall of Famers and then the Hall of Famers.
Right.
Yeah.
Once you're in the Hall of Fame, you're in the Hall of Fame. That's how I feel. But
right.
I think one way to conceptualize, if you're trying to think about, and I'm curious to get your take on this, who the best players ever were, is if there were an ultimate game that was played, two 53-man rosters, are you in that game? If you're in that game, to me, you're in the Hall. And if you're starting in that game, now you're in the Hall. Devin Hester, from the second that he became eligible to be in the Hall of Fame,
right,
would have been the first returner chosen in the ultimate football game ever to be played.
Right.
To me, that means he's got to be in the Hall of Fame immediately.
Yes. No question. And without our rules prohibit me from going into any real depth on what was discussed.
Sure.
But there was a lot of discussion in our meetings.
I want you to use the ultimate game discussion.
I've made a mental note.
Yeah, good.
I'm going to call it the Nathan Rule. and look, I think everything you just said there, though, is very true. Words to that effect came up with regard to impact. Obviously, the case was made for him. And then there's point and counterpoint. Okay, back to the how much time do you actually play? How much are you on the field? And are we as a – but here's the thing about football. The game includes people who don't have as many snaps as others. That's just part of the game. And I think ultimately the common sense reaction to a discussion about a specialist player is he's as much part of the game as the quarterback. It doesn't – you know, per Deion Sanders, maybe it doesn't feel like – you would put him in the over-the-top Hall category, but I'm not down with that at all. I think that it was a rabble-rousing kind of move, and as a selector, as a voter, look, we never get told how great a job we've done to put a class in. We always picked on by the folks who say, look at who you left out. The worst night of sleep I get every year, is the night before the selection meeting, because I know it's not about the criticism, Nathan. It's about the person who's with his family or if he's, you know, deceased posthumously, but the family, the friends, the people, and the guy who are just calling them heartbroken and devastated is too soft a term.
Yeah.
It's crushing, and you're affecting that when they're not voted in. And the last thing I just want to say also about the voting process, I never see it as who I'm against. I'm for it. Remember, there's a reduction. We start with 25. We get it down to 15. We get it down to the final 7 or 8. And I'm also on the subcommittee for the coach and contributor category. There's a dozen of us who vote separate from the 68 or so who are on the selection panel, the full selection panel. And again, I'm not against. I'm for these people. They don't let us put them all in. And you know what? They all shouldn't be put in as a group because it diminishes what the Hall is.
Absolutely. I think it's a fascinating thing. And obviously, I learned a little bit more about it this year with Joe Thomas going in.
Of course.
And kind of getting to talk to him about the process and all of that.
Oh, and you know, I can't tell you also how special it feels when you have a personal tie. I mean, being with Joe all the years with the Browns, And I remember having a conversation with him in Canton the day before the induction ceremony. It was just such a special thing. One other thing I want to say about this, though, about the combine, the tampering that happens, which is and it's the wink nod tampering, because everybody does it.
It's the backbone of the combine, honestly.
It is the backbone of the combine. There you go. Thank you. Because more business is getting done, or the groundwork of business is getting done in these days than gets done at any other point. The agents come here ready for bear, you know, loaded for bear, ready to strike, to do something. They are setting their game plans for the free agency period. The GMs are doing the same thing. Who can we retain? Who do we need to restructure? Who are we saying goodbye to? Who's going to take a pay cut? Who's going to whatever it is. Those conversations happen, and I think the GMs are much busier with that than the scouts are the ones in the stands with the, yeah, let's look at his vertical, let's look at his 40 again.
I think sometimes people forget that the league year is in 2.5 weeks.
Right.
3 weeks from now.
Yeah.
The draft's not till the end of April.
Correct.
Like, all the business that really is urgent and was going to even shape what you end up doing in the draft is happening soon.
Is happening soon, and it's happening, and I think I always think it's fun that you walk through the various lobbies. Obviously, all these hotels are interconnected, and you could stay inside and go into the lobbies of how many different hotels from this convention center. And you just drift. I used to always I'll probably do it tomorrow, the tour of the lobbies, just to see who's talking to who.
Yeah.
You know what the conversation is. You see Drew Rosenhaus sitting with whoever, Brandon Bean or whoever the GM is, and I know what they're talking about, and it ain't the weather.
Yeah, exactly. All right, let's talk a little Bills, and then we're going to talk a little Browns.
Sure, sure.
Heartbreaking for the Bills again this year, probably at home, the way that it – just everything about tough. Where do they go from here? Because you have windows, you have guys getting older, especially on the defensive side of the ball for them. What's that look like? I feel like with Josh Allen, you're always going to be in the discussion of being able to pry the window open to some degree.
Sure.
But it feels like there could be a lot of changes on both sides, because Diggs, who knows what's going to happen there, and Davis is a free agent and going on.
I think it's going to be a very different looking team. It has to be, because start the conversation with 21 or 22 free agents, pending free agents.
And good ones.
And good ones. And a guy like a Micah Hyde, who has been a fixture in a secondary. How many safety combinations where you had Micah Hyde and Jordan Poyer?
Former Brown.
Former Brown. But 7 years together. Like, that's unfathomable. You know, when you really look at that and say, and even though Hyde missed most of last season, they still have been when they bring them out post game for the news conference, they have to do it together. It's like a thing. It's their brand. So that change alone would be a big one, saying goodbye to Hyde. But overall, going to be very tough. Now, the fact that the salary cap went up from a projected 242-ish to 255.4 million per team, the gain of that 13 or so million could influence and help the ability of Buffalo to possibly retain some people they might not have been able to. I don't see Gabe Davis sticking around as the number two. I think he's going to flirt that market and take his shot to
get
more money.
Would he be a good guy for Cleveland? Knows Dorsey?
I think there's a good matchup and has had some of his best football with Dorsey. Dorsey knows how to dial it up for him. Yes, a big guy, athletic guy, maybe not the most consistent concentrated guy, but I think each year he might mature, and I think he's at a point of maturity. Hardest worker you'll ever see. Okay. This guy from draft day, he was doing. There was video of him doing running routes and working up an incredible. Like, I got tired watching the video of him after he was selected by the Bills. And then you say it with Josh Allen. Yes, the window stays open as long as he is their quarterback. However, the defense is going to get. Is got some big question marks. Tre'Davious White, does he come back from that knee? Von Miller, is he ever going to be what he was at the beginning of 2 seasons ago? You look at Stephon Diggs. His contract is big, I don't see it as a good fit for a guy whose production tailed off. Now, asking Brandon Bean about it, he says it's business as usual, but I'm not convinced that that's truly the case. Yeah. I think something's got to give, and asking him to take a pay cut, my guess is he won't love that.
Yeah.
And that could be a big problem. But that wasn't brought up. That's me talking. Look, the heart, like you said, the heartbreak. Hey, they got everything they wanted last year, despite a season that at one point looked like they weren't going to make the playoffs. Then they turn into the number two seed. They win their fourth consecutive division title. They get the Chiefs in Buffalo. And the whole story was, if you can't beat the Chiefs in Arrowhead, but you get them in Buffalo, that'll be different. Well, it wasn't different. But it was the way it happened. Diggs dropping a deep pass, the Tyler Bass wide right on a very makeable distance field goal. Those are the things that sting and will stay with them. So we'll see. And by the way, the competition, including the Browns, the competition in the AFC isn't going to get any easier.
No, it's loaded. But going back to when you were talking about the Hall and special teamers, Bills maybe win that game without special teams.
Hey.
And I'll tell you what, the Niners win the Super Bowl without special teams.
And do you remember the Monday night season opener against the Jets? How that game ended? Special teams.
It'd be a punt return touchdown
there
from
you
the kid from Hard Knocks. Xavier Gibson, I want to say, maybe his name was.
Yeah. Maybe. Maybe that was it. No, it was. And it was, believe me, Sean McDermott hasn't forgotten that. And honestly, there were coaching staff changes. Now, one of them being, of course, they made Bobby Babich, a former Browns assistant, went from linebackers coach to defensive coordinator. I think Sean McDermott will continue to call the signals as he did last season.
By the way, I was with Bobby last night. I love him.
But I've said it while he was with the Browns, and I'll say it again. He's going to be a head coach in this league. He has got the timber to be a head coach.
No doubt.
Anyway.
So last night at Prime, later night, I was walking out and saw a lot of familiar faces, and I'm sitting there. Bobby's now DC of the Bills. Yep. Mike McDaniel, head coach of the Dolphins. Yep. And Anthony Weaver, is the DC of the Dolphins. They're all in that 14 staff.
All went through Berea. I mean, you know, we're going to go back to Belichick and Saban and, you know, go through the litany of names, Pioli. But anyway, I brought up the coaching staff change because the one staff change wasn't made with special teams, and I think that is as much as anything needs the most cleaning up.
Yeah. Well, because special teams is one of those things that you don't want to talk about, but when you are, it's typically bad. The ball goes off the guy's foot. For the Niners, that gives a touchdown. You miss an extra point or blocked. That's 8 points.
Decisive.
Yeah. Could be our guy Kyle also with the Browns on that same 2014 staff. Could have got him his first Super Bowl. All right, talking about the Browns.
Yes.
You know, we finally got to see in the second half against the Ravens, Deshaun, that was why they brought him here.
Mm-hmm.
Flawless. Leads a come-from-behind victory in Baltimore against a team that, you know, for a portion of the season, many people thought was the best team in the NFL. Then he doesn't play again. We get the wild time with Joe Flacco, but now it's back to Deshaun. And that's why you bring in Ken Dorsey, try to help him out. We talked about that on Browns Daily. What do you kind of see from this team as some of the things that they've got to do this offseason to be able to take that leap? I mean, obviously staying healthy can't control that, but to be able to take that leap.
Well, they're as much as it worked out remarkably well, you'd have to say, and why Kevin Stefanski got my coach of the year vote. As much as you can say that with four different quarterbacks, that can't happen again or anything close to
the
it.
The final eight in the NFL, only C.J. Stroud missed games, and he missed two with a concussion.
And the only quarterback that can play or that needs to play and not only play the fullest of seasons, but take it to that level of what inspired the whole purpose of bringing him aboard is Deshaun Watson. You ask me a simple answer to the question. It has to be Watson or bust. It has to be everything about their season is driving there. Now, they threw an asset at it with the Ken Dorsey hiring. Now, I also think Alex Van Pelt, I have high regard for him.
I've
known him since his rookie year in the NFL as a player with Buffalo. I don't necessarily know that it was an upgrade at coordinator, but I'm going to tell you it's different. That's my point. I don't think in any way the graph went up or down.
Right.
Because I do have great regard also for Ken Dorsey. I also thought when Ken Dorsey was fired by the Bills, it felt a little scapegoatish, a lot scapegoatish.
Josh Allen felt terrible.
You know, and Josh was crushed because Josh was the reason he got the job, and Josh also was the reason he got fired, and Josh knows it. And he'll probably have a hard time forgiving himself for that and wanting it to happen, even if things worked out well with Joe Brady. All of that said, back to the to the Browns. Dorsey's learned some valuable lessons about balance offense, and if the right, the sweet spot can be found between getting the max out of Dorsey, as the max out of Watson from Dorsey as the thrower runner, the thrower on the run, but there will be some running component that I think he designs well. He did it for Cam Newton before. Yep. He did it for Josh Allen, right, as a quarterback's coach in Carolina. And then the running game itself being a presence, being something that takes the pressure off, that all those components are there with the O-line. And I have faith that Stefanski can figure that out and get it done. But here's the other bottom line. Can't succumb to the feeling of pressure, the pressure cooker that is this season, the stakes being what they are. And the realization of that, and sometimes the thought of that, and even if everybody says the right thing, we know what we're doing. It's no different than it is different. We can say it from the outside. They may not necessarily want to acknowledge it, they being the coach, the GM, the whole works. As long as they manage that as well as, you know, manage it well, and then everything else within the team, and you get some breaks with health, there's no reason to think that the Browns couldn't be competing for a division title and a deep playoff run from a division that is pretty balanced. I mean, do we look at the Ravens with fear? Do you say they can't? No, they can play with any of those teams, and I think they can play with any team in the entire conference.
Yeah, and it's a loaded conference.
And it's a loaded conference.
You've covered the league for a long time. It feels like when you look around the AFC, it's as good as it's maybe ever been.
And I love that, because part of what makes us say that is the C.J. Stroud factor in Houston, seeing young quarterbacks emerge. Not sure what's going to happen with Pittsburgh, but we sure as heck know a healthy Joe Burrow in Cincinnati. Look what that means.
Right.
Again, we know what the Browns have. We know what the Ravens have, and there's that MVP quarterback in Lamar, and then Josh Allen, and I can't believe I'm mentioning them. Not necessarily last, but the Chiefs aren't going anywhere.
No.
And they're going to be just as good. Why does Andy Reid – Andy Reid is going to – I'm making a little prediction here.
Okay.
Going to be signing a contract extension soon. I believe he'll – and rightfully so. And what a shock. You know, Super Bowl winner gets a contract extension. He at 65 has no desire to do anything except what he's doing. And why? He's got a 28-year-old freak as a quarterback who's going to be a freak for at least – possibly another 10 years.
And you got to tip your cap to him, too, for, and really their whole organization, for realizing that they had to change who they were. They became a defensive kind of bully team.
Reinvented themselves.
Yeah, which is incredible.
And that speaks to not only the wisdom and intelligence of a head coach, but selling that idea to your team.
And think about Mahomes. You're not throwing for 450 yards every game.
You convince this quarterback, some days you're going to be the caddy to the defense. Really? Mr. Dominant Super Bowl MVP, as great a quarterback as I've ever seen. And in the whole juxtaposition of Tom Brady and Patrick Mahomes, that conversation's real. I mean, there are more pelts on the Brady wall, but it's not just pelts. It's what you see, what your eyes tell you that, oh, my God, he can do it. And coming to the realization, he doesn't have to throw for 400 yards and four touchdowns every game. Sometimes, and most of the time it is, make two or three more plays than the other team.
And that's what he did. And then when he needed to, we needed to get a field goal to get into overtime. He needed a touchdown to win it.
Boom. And, the same thing you'd say about Brady. Give him the ball last, you're probably going to lose.
At your own peril.
That's right.
At your own peril.
Yeah.
Yeah, a remarkable, remarkable season and a great Super Bowl win. And, again, it sets up, as you talk about, in this AFC, just loaded. And that's when, and not to mention in the Bills division, Aaron Rodgers is coming back.
Maybe
he'll get more than four plays.
And if he comes back and plays, say, five or six. No. If he comes back and gives them the full season –
they're a force.
They've got to be considered a force. I think they've got a lot of other issues and problems to overcome that are not Rodgers related necessarily. And Rodgers himself identified the culture thing in the building that he didn't like. So that's got to change. And I don't know is that emanating from the top? If it is, might not be as fixable. But I'll buy that more of Rodgers gives them a chance. And, oh, by the way, don't sleep on the Miami Dolphins. The great Peter King retiring the other day, announcing that retirement, and read his column, and it was another of his masterpieces, his outgoing column. In there, he mentions that the team he's looking out for, the team that he thinks he's got an eye on, is the Dolphins. And he mentions it because of the brilliance of their head coach.
Yep.
That he sees just he used an anecdote of a specific play he saw that you would think was innocuous in a game, but he brought it up to him, and it was a weird use of motion or something pre-snap. And McDaniel hears this and kind of says, like, why did you pick that out? Like, were you reading our – you got cameras and microphones in our building, because the what made that play so special, it goes back to, like, 80-something years at from the college level that he pulled that play and says, if I put this together, and it was specifically against New England, that it worked, because he said, what has Bill Belichick not seen? You got to give him something that he might say – And I guess, as Peter mentioned, in pre-snap, the Patriots defense was doing, like, wait, what's happening over here? And Peter tells a wonderful story, much better than I just told it, but it's a great great part of that column. Anyway.
What a treat. An absolute pleasure.
Same here.
Absolute pleasure to be with you.
Well, loved it.
We love you.
Love you, too.
Thanks.
Love all you guys. You, Jason Gibbs, my whole crew, Bo. Just seeing it always feels like coming back home, even when it's a remote home in Indiana.
You've always got the Uncle Victor suite. Yeah, it's always reserved for you. Thanks
Love
so
it.
Much, man.
Right.
Appreciate it.
All right, buddy.
All right, great stuff from Z and Vic on that. We are back tomorrow. The Next Level is coming up next. Thanks for listening, everybody. Cleveland Browns Daily, 850 ESPN Cleveland.
You know that feeling when you walk into your home, take a deep breath, and feel new? Well, that's what it's like to use Clorox Scentiva. Because Clorox Scentiva smells like coconut, cleans like Clorox, and feels like energy. It'll elevate any cleaning routine to not just clean, but also make every room smell like a tropical coconut getaway. Discover how Clorox Scentiva's powerful clean and refreshing scents can transform your space. Get yours in coconut or other fabulous scents at a nearby retail store.